From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Organic vegetables might be the produce of choice for your family, and maybe for many of the people you know, but how big of a leap is it to think that organic farming could be the answer to providing safe, stable, ecologically balanced food for our region, or maybe for our state, maybe even for the world? A new report, which was published recently in Nature, says organic farming cannot be the entire answer. And one of its three authors, Naveen Ramankutty, joins us by phone from Montreal, where he's with the Department of Geography and Global Environment and Climate Change Center at McGill University. Hello, Dr. Ramankutty. Welcome to Insight.
Hi there.
First of all, how did you define organic farming for your study?
Yeah, that was a really tricky question to handle. In our case, since there's very many different definitions of what people might call sustainable agriculture, in our particular case, we decided to stick with certified organic farms. So farms that were already certified by known certification standards.
Okay, then based on that, many experts are saying maybe a mix of organic and conventional farming is most likely the solution. But what did you find?
So what we found, there were actually two kinds of messages. What we found overall is that the yields of organic farms were about 25% lower than those of conventional farms. However, the main focus of our study was to see under what context and why organic agriculture performs better or worse than conventional agriculture. And so we looked across a whole suite of different conditions, both biophysical conditions as well as the way we manage our agricultural lands. And we found that there are certain conditions in which organic agriculture actually performs almost as well as conventional agriculture. For example, we found that with cereals, for example, organic agriculture doesn't do so well, but with fruits, organic agriculture performs quite well. In general, we found that perennial crops and legumes, organic agriculture seems to do quite well.
Your information, I understand, was printed as a letter in Nature. Is that correct?
Pardon me, I didn't hear that.
I said your report was printed as a letter in Nature?
Yeah, that's correct. That's just the journal Nature. They call certain articles letters. So they're regular articles, but they just call them letters.
Oh, the reason I was making the distinction was I was under the impression that it was a little more like breaking news, and I was wondering how much I could read into that to quantify the importance of your research right now in farming, and particularly in the organic farming industry.
I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time hearing.
Okay, well then I am going to bring in our other guest right now, because here in our studio is Raul Adamczak. He is the market, stand by though, please, Naveen, the market garden coordinator at the UC Davis Student Farm. And we'll ask him that same question. What kind of echo did this report produce for you?
Well, it was in line with my experience with organic agriculture that there were some crops, especially the ones that required a lot of nitrogen to grow well, that the yields in organic systems would be less. But I was impressed with the study in the sense that they did look at the effect of cover crops on organic yields compared to conventional yields. And they also showed how, as Naveen said, legumes produced similarly to conventional crops. So, I think that yield is an important issue for sustainable agriculture, but it's certainly not the only issue. There's still the use of pesticides, the runoff of nitrogen from farm fields, the use of energy, the use of water, the reduction of soil erosion. So all of these issues really are the issues of sustainable agriculture. And we need to look at all of those when we look at what farming practices and what tools we need for the future in order to develop a more sustainable agriculture.
What percentage of our food supply do you believe can we really expect organic farming to produce? And I guess it's a different question when you ask about the region compared to the state, compared to the world. For us here in Northern California, what percentage would you hope for?
Well, it's funny. I looked at Yolo County, and right now in Yolo County, there's about 1 to 2% of the land, the total farmable land in Yolo County, is farmed organically. And if you looked at the local potential inputs of animal manures, the products you need to fertilize organic, in Yolo County, there might be the potential to do about 40 or 50,000 acres.
Hmm.
So you could potentially provide the nutrients for almost 10 times as much land, but you also have to realize that Yolo County has over 400,000 acres of land, so that might be roughly 10% of the total, that if you stayed local in terms of inputs, you could only farm 10 or so percent with the available nutrients that you could get from animal agriculture.
You're listening to Raul Adamczak, who's from the UC Davis Student Farm. And we're also speaking with Naveen Ramankutty from Montreal about a study that he just did about the yields of organic farms compared to traditional. Are you hearing me clearly, Naveen?
It's still not very clear. I'm sorry.
Can you comment about our organic farming picture in Northern California?
I don't know a lot about Californian agriculture, but what I do know is that California produces, I think, nearly half of all the fruits in the United States. So one of the things that struck me is that a place like California, where fruit production is so important, and one of the main results of our study was that if you look at fruits, the difference in yields between organic and conventional agriculture is very small. So, one of the main arguments of our paper is that with perennial crop production, including fruits, organic production may actually be as competitive in terms of yields as conventional production. So one of my thoughts was that California, from this paper, may actually have some good news.
With that, then, let's bring in Pamela Ronald, who is a professor of plant pathology at the UC Davis Genome Center. Good morning, Dr. Ronald.
Good morning.
Well, you just heard Naveen talking about it and saying in some areas organic could be as competitive. You wrote a response to the report. What did you say in the response?
Well, I was really pleased to read the report. It's very helpful, I think, for scientists and consumers to see these large analyses, and I think their report was very balanced because they're pointing out that for staple food crops, at least currently, the yields are generally lower for wheat, rice, maize. But then, certainly, for some crops, the yields over organic can match. And so I think it's really important to get that information out to the public because it has important policy effects.
How serious is that discussion of organic becoming more than 50% or as close to 100% of the farming as possible? And I guess with that, what does the future food supply look like to you?
I think right now globally organic production is something less than 1% of total land being farmed. And organic farmers have challenges, as all farmers do, in terms of both stresses caused by diseases and pests, as well as environmental stresses, which can be too much water or too little water, or heat or cold. And as we know, globally, we need to produce much more food in a very short time, but we need to do it in a way that greatly lessens the environmental impact. So these are really important questions, and there are many different ways we can do this, and we must use all these tools. So, for example, trying to reduce consumption of meat in areas where we can, although that's increasingly difficult as more and more people are eating meat. And we need to farm much more efficiently using less land and less water and less toxic input. So there's going to be a whole variety of different types of practical farming issues, policy issues, and using the most appropriate seed technologies for a particular region.
I'm going to return here to Raul Adamczak. Naveen said in the beginning that the report looked at certified organic farms. In your work with the Student Center and organic, how broadly is that term used? What is it encompassing now?
Well, these days, the USDA has national organic standards. So every organic farm in the U.S. legally has to be a certified organic farm. So that is very widespread. Europe has their own organic certification system. Japan, every developed country has organic certification systems, and the certifiers in those countries also work in other countries where they don't have systems, but they just apply the national standards to those other countries. So it's very widespread.
Well, I would like to turn the subject just a little bit and, Pamela, go back to you. You work at the Genome Center, and I understand your lab is working on a genetically engineered rice for, I guess this is for Africa. So in the scheme of talking about this food supply, where does genetically altered food fit into the equation for you?
Well, I use genetics as a tool in all my research, as do most plant biologists and breeders all around the world, and there's different types of genetic modifications. So everything we eat has been genetically altered in some way, and virtually nothing we eat occurs in the wild anymore, and these are considered domesticated species. So these are, for example, you think about what you had for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, most of that food has been produced on farms, and most of the foods grown on farms are considered exotic. They actually never occurred here until farmers came along, and they've been altered in many, many different ways. So 10,000 years ago, the alterations were simple domestication, where the farmers would gather the seed and collect the seed. Then about 150 years ago, more modern methods of seed alterations entered agriculture. So you can make pollinations between very different species and sort of force new hybrids into production that would not have occurred in nature. And there's different types of mutagenesis that people use, that they soak seed in mutagenic solutions that creates random mutations, and then these are selected and brought into the food system. And all this is considered conventional types of genetic modification. And then over the last 15 years, there's been a new type of genetic alteration called genetic engineering that has two major differences. One, the genes that are targeted for introduction are very well characterized, and the introduction is very precise. So you take one very well characterized gene, whereas conventional methods introduce many, many genetic changes. And then, of course, the other big difference is that with genetic engineering, a gene from any species can be brought into a plant species. And so we're seeing, certainly in the United States and South America, many, many crops have been genetically engineered. And the reason, of course, is this focus on reducing the use of toxic inputs. That's really one of the important contributions of the genetically engineered crops that have been available to date. So, for example, in cotton, there's been massive reductions in insecticides in the environment. And then there's smaller acreage. For example, papaya faces a very devastating disease, and there's a genetically engineered papaya that can withstand this disease, and virtually all the papaya we eat in California is genetically engineered papaya.
Dr. Ronald, thank you so much for the input. I know that people can explore these topics at great length on their own, so we've just given them the beginnings. Dr. Pamela Ronald from UC Davis, also Raul Adamczyk from UC Davis, and thank you, Naveen Ramankutty, for joining us from Montreal. There is more information about these topics through links at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. Up next, and in our studio, the students staging the hunger strike at Sac State.